Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 115 of Geek Town Radio. We're back this week with Matt.
Hi David, how are you?
I'm alright, how are you, Matt?
I'm okay, I'm a little bit tired. I had to get up slightly earlier today, but apart from that, I am doing good.
Brilliant, good. So what have you been up to? What things have you been watching?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, there was some news that there was a Dishonored 2 trial on the PlayStation Store. And
oh,
I downloaded it and then didn't really think much because I can't remember what it was, but at the time I had it downloaded, but I was playing something else. I can't remember exactly what it was, which doesn't speak well for whatever game that was. But then I went and finished off, I think it was The Witcher, the Blood and Wine thing, but that was on the Xbox.
Yeah.
So I went from the PlayStation game to The Witcher, and then I finished that and thought, okay, I'm sure I've got some other games that I have stored away or whatever to play. So I went and played the Dishonored 2 trial. When I first played this first kind of 5 minutes, I didn't really like the art style, but then I kind of got used to that. And as I started to play more of it, I started to thought, okay, I must be enjoying this because I'm continuing to play it.
Yeah.
When it's a trial thing, it lets you play up to mission 3, I think, on the trial.
Right.
Decided I liked it, and then I was a bit disappointed when the trial ended because I wanted to keep going. So I then went and went on my Boomerang game rental subscription thing that I have, and put Dishonored 1 and 2, which was the definitive edition.
Right.
The first one, put those in my list and then waited for those to get delivered. The second one actually came in first, and then the first one came
after
that.
That's annoying.
Yeah, I really liked the game a lot. It was a bit different to what I was expecting in a good way, in that I didn't know it was one of them sort of two-handed games where you have like a sword in one hand and a kind of secondary thing in the other hand.
Yeah.
It can be blink, or it can be the crossbow, which I really liked, or it can be the shotgun, or the, I think it's a shotgun.
Yes.
So I quite like that mechanic quite a bit, and I thought the blink ability was really good.
Yeah.
And then I just kept going through the story of Dishonored 1, and yeah, I'm still playing it now, so I think it's pretty good.
Good.
Have you played it?
Yes, played all the way through Dishonored 1. I was actually playing Dishonored 2 up until quite recently. And then we had a conversation on chat about Skyrim.
Yeah, yeah.
Which sort of had me hankering for going back to Skyrim because I hadn't played that for a while. And it's the Bethesda game that I never actually quite got around to finishing. So
okay.
I'm trying to sort of start again. I actually had a copy of the special edition, which I hadn't actually tried, which has all the DLC in it. So I booted that back up and put a bunch of mods on because I'm playing on PC. So so sort of modded it up. And I'm playing through Skyrim at the moment, which I'm quite enjoying.
Cool. Yeah, I think that was maybe because I had three games on me at once because one of them was a bonus game. I think Skyrim was the other thing I played while I was waiting for Dishonored.
Right,
That's the one I was playing. I had the definitive edition, which like you were saying to me at the time because we were talking about it. And I said, oh, it doesn't look quite as good, and you're saying because of the mods on PC you can make it look better and stuff.
Yeah,
I kind of decided to stop playing it. I just wasn't enjoying it at all,
and
the plot wasn't really grabbing me, and it just is a bit of a difficulty going back to old games because they just don't look or play as good as, you know, these new kind of modern games. That's kind of where I went with Skyrim.
I'm enjoying it, and as I say, the PC version is quite good because you can really mess around with the graphics quite a lot and improve it quite a bit, you know, even sort of improving facial things and, you know, all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's still not quite up to the level of newer games, but it gets it's getting a lot closer. So, there's so much stuff to do in that game. I mean, it's in the same way of like Fallout 4 and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, with Dishonored, it looks like in between Skyrim and sort of modern games, but because it's got a little bit of animation, cartoony type thing, it doesn't hurt it as much because you've got a bit of that in there, and that does give it a little bit of sort of more color and stuff. So I think that's how that worked better.
Yes.
There was a character that died at the start of Dishonored 2. I can't remember who exactly it was because I didn't quite know what was going on in the story because I hadn't played the first one.
Right.
So it would be good to go through the first one again. But again, you know, the trial was there, so I just played that.
Yeah.
Injustice 2 is another thing I've been playing. I've actually finished it because it's very, very short.
Right.
And I don't want to give away too much. I'll just tell you kind of what the plot is because the story is so short that if I start talking about it, it will spoil too much of it.
Yeah.
Basically, the plot is that they're going after Brainiac and it turns into a little bit of a Batman v Superman kind of thing. It's a little bit like if Batman v Superman was a bit more Civil War style in terms of like who's going on whose side and that kind of thing. And as you're playing through the game, you kind of just think, if you guys stopped arguing for 5 minutes and dealt with Brainiac, he might not destroy Atlantis and Gotham and Metropolis and all these other places. Because, you know, Batman's got his way of doing things, Superman's got his way of doing things, and then they kind of, you know, characters argue about that, and then they decide which side they're on. So there's a little bit of that comic booky kind of, obviously it's a comic book storyline kind of thing. But yeah, I've not really been a brawler gamer type, you know, side-by-side fighting game type person. I've not really played those. And in terms of the combos, I was sort of looking at the list of them and I was like, okay, I'm not going to remember any of these. Like I've looked at 15 different combos. I'm not going to remember them all. So I'll just try and hit a few buttons here and there without trying to like button mash too much. I sort of put two or three of them in my brain and then tried to do some basic hits along with that. And I got along fairly well. So
I'm sort of the same as you. I mean, I might get it at some point, but I'm probably going to wait until it drops in price quite considerably because if you buy it on console and it's a very kind of console game, that sort of thing, because effectively it's a beat 'em up. It's a side beat 'em up. I know you're saying there is a story to it, but
I mean, it's DC, so that's the reason I kind of got it. So,
I mean, you know, it's really designed for you to sit down and play with friends and that sort of stuff, I think, more than anything else. So I'm not hugely into those sort of games, although this does seem to be a very good example of it. I'm probably not going to pick it up until much later.
What I would say as well, if you're not a gamer, you're more of a TV or film person, which is still a reason you'd listen to this podcast, maybe like watch the cutscenes on YouTube or something, because what that basically does is cut out fights and lets you watch it as like a kind of lengthy film, sort of like a CG superhero film of sorts. So that you don't miss out on the entire story. And then of course there's I think there's three different endings or two different endings, and then you can just pick the video of whichever one you want. They're on YouTube, so you can maybe go and check those out.
Yeah,
I went and saw Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I can't remember if we did actually speak about this, if I spoke to you about it.
I don't remember
speaking to you about Geek Town. So.
No.
Me and Chris did a podcast for that. Yeah, I thought it's a little bit more distant in my memory because it was a few weeks ago, but it was pretty good. It sets up, you know, some good MCU things. Baby Groot's obviously a big feature in the film. He takes up some screen time with Rocket Raccoon.
Arguably too much of a feature in that film, possibly.
Maybe. Me and Chris had a healthy kind of disagreement on that. he kind of agreed with you, whereas I quite like the two of them on screen together. Especially his scene, their scenes with Mondo, is it?
Yeah.
Michael Rooker's character.
Yes.
I thought that was pretty good. A great sort of fun family Marvel film. So it was pretty good. Masters of None season 2 I watched and finished because it's pretty short. You know, you got 10 episodes in a half an hour.
Yeah.
It doesn't take that long to get through, which I also reviewed as well. Have you seen any of this?
No, it's not one I've got to yet. I know people keep on telling me it's quite good, but it's not one I've got to yet.
I watched it in like 3 days, 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
But I sort of sat there and watched four of them in a row sort of thing. It was a great season. It had some nice different things. It's kind of got more of the same of the good stuff, and then they do kind of change the storyline up a bit. That's mainly because one of the characters goes to a different country. So there's like the first episode is in black and white, and that gives an interesting kind of look and feel to it. And then he spends some time with his friend called Arnold, the character called Dev, who's the main character. I think it was Ross who was on this a couple of weeks ago, said about Dev's
the parents
being the actor's actual parents.
Yes,
I found that pretty interesting. And I wasn't paying too much attention to the parents in the series, but I thought that was really, really interesting.
Yeah,
it's a bit like with the young Sheldon thing, how you've got Sheldon's current mum in Big Bang, her daughter,
Laurie Metcalf's daughter plays the younger version of Sheldon's mum in Young Sheldon.
Yeah, so it's like a passing of the torch.
Yes, and she does a scarily good job at it as well.
I thought that was a great season this year.
Yeah.
And it does go just in different places to season one, so it's not too repetitive, but has some of the good same stuff. Also watched Sense8 season 2, which I don't know if the second season was as good as the first. It took a little while to get going. The idea of the series is like these people connects, is it telepathically?
They
connect that way, and it really helps with the series. But with the first kind of 6-7 episodes, they don't do that as effectively as what they could, and it just sort of puts the plot sort of to one side, and it's a bit sort of weird in the way that they do that.
Yeah,
but then once sort of episode 7 or 8 came around and it sort of clicked into place a bit more, it worked a lot better. So, but it had a nice kind of cliffhanger finish, so I thought it was interesting. It's probably going to get a third season. I would be surprised if it didn't. So I'm looking forward to that. And it did take its time to come back, didn't it?
We got that Christmas special sort of in between as well. But
which was 2 hours long. So
yes.
some good stuff there.
I watched the first season. I've watched the Christmas special. I haven't got to the second season yet. It is on my list of things that I will get to.
That's basically what I've been up to.
Well, I've also been hanging around on Netflix because I've been trying... good place to be. I've been trying to catch up on Once Upon a Time because I was about 3 episodes into the current season that's just finished, and I left it for ages. So now things have calmed down a little bit on kind of normal TV. I've gone back to that just sort of as my backup show. So when there's nothing else on, that's what I go and watch. So I'm working through, I think I'm about on episode 10 now. So I've managed to get through a few more episodes. So I'm catching up gradually on that. I sort of want to see where they end up. I'm kind of enjoying it. It's okay. It's sort of good background TV. I'm sort of 6 seasons in now. So it's one of those things that I want to see how this whole storyline ends. Because as we've spoken before, they have got a 7th season coming. But they basically sacked most of the cast. So I want to see how this story ends and where it ends up. And it's fine. It's good kind of fun background TV, but I'm not kind of... if something else comes along and it gets too busy, I'm probably going to end up dropping that again and I'll go back to it later on.
How many seasons is there? 7?
There's 6 already. They've just been ordered for a 7th. Which
the 7th is the one with the big changes.
Yeah, 7th is going to have big changes. So that, I've been watching American Gods onto episode...
I've got to put that on my list.
3 now as well, which is quite good. I like that. It's getting progressively stranger as we get into further episodes, which I'm quite enjoying. Not quite to the Legion level of strange, but it is sort of heading there, you know, so I think that's quite good.
If I'm comparing Legion and American Gods, Legion was a bit more annoyingly strange, where like it's sort of bending reality and whatnot, whereas this feels a lot more grounded.
Yeah.
A bit more sort of like Preacher kind of.
Yes. It's weird in a Preacher way. Yes, I think that's fair.
Where you can have a bit of a better sense of what's going on.
Yeah.
So
I know what you mean. And other than that, after all the upfronts finished last week, they released a whole load of trailers for various things. So you're just saying before we came on air, you spent about an hour and a half going through trailers. So there's a lot. They're all up on the website if you want to go and have a look for CW and Fox and ABC. We've got trailers and CBS as well. There are trailers up there for. Out of all the shows that have been up, I mean, there's some interesting announcements. Black Lightning, which we've now seen a bit more of. Announcement for that was the fact that they're not going to put it as part of the Arrowverse. I don't see that decision lasting more than one season, in all honesty.
No. I think it's a bit of like an experimental step because they sort of done the same thing with Supergirl.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the four of them that they got at the moment, Legends is probably the most off on its own because they're literally like just time traveling all over the place, whereas Supergirl is like in one consecutive storyline, but it isn't on the same Earth as Barry and Oliver.
I think the thing with Black Lightning is they've basically said it's not part of the Arrowverse because of the fact that it's shot in Atlanta. It's not shot in Vancouver with everything else.
Okay.
So that's part of the reason for it, why it's not, why they're saying, well, it's not directly connected, so you're not going to see a five-way crossover. I think, yes, I get that. I think that's fair enough, but I also think it's a bit of a mistake. What I would have said, if in their shoes, would be you won't see a five-way crossover, but it is part of the same universe. Even if they don't, you don't see them as part of the same universe. Even if you never see the characters cross over, at least then you can establish it as part of the same thing. So I don't know. We'll see. But unless there's anything that they do in Black Lightning which should particularly have them set apart, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't be part of the same universe going forward, even though at the moment they're saying they're not going to be. But I quite like the look of that. I had a slight issue with his suit. His suit's incredibly chunky.
It's a bit like Savitar's. Maybe not quite as big as Savitar's, but...
Yeah, but it is. I was expecting it to be a lot sleeker than it was, and it isn't. It's very chunky, your suit on that. So
is it because of his body type?
Quite possibly,
like he's a bit more of like a Luke Cage than like a slim sort of Oliver or Barry kind of thing.
Yeah, so maybe. I don't know. Hopefully they maybe do something about that going forward. But I did think his suit looked incredibly chunky on that. So that I'm quite looking forward to out of the trailers. Inhumans, we've only had a very small glimpse of the Inhumans trailer so far, which was basically a voiceover, and we've seen a publicity shot. But I do like the look of that. The Gifted, I quite like the look of, which is the X-Men spin-off.
Yeah, that's one that's got potential if Fox does it right. I can see it going both ways, where Fox messes it up and I can see where Fox gets it right. Yeah. Fox are a very odd company. They get some things wrong and they just get some things right as well.
Yeah.
They make either really good decisions or really bad decisions.
Yes, there's very little middle ground with them.
Or some puzzling decisions as well.
Yes, I mean, The Gifted, the thing that it has going for it is they are tying it to the X-Men more so than something like Legion was tied to the X-Men. And they do actually reference X-Men in the trailer. And they also have Bryan Singer on board, who is the guy behind the X-Men movies, the earlier X-Men movies. So he's on board as well and directing, and I think he's producing. So I think, you know, it looks like it's going in the right direction, I think. That. Plus, it's got Amy Acker in it, and, you know, I'm predisposed to liking anything with Amy Acker in it. So. And Stephen Moyer. Stephen Moyer from True Blood is the other adult lead in that. So, you know, I like both those actors, so that should be really good.
I've seen someone online that said, you know, the blonde girl in this trailer, that she looks... Yes. She sort of got vibes of Claire from Heroes, like a younger Claire from Heroes, sort of season one.
Yeah, interesting. Yes. Yeah. Well, she's young and blonde, but yes. that looked quite good. Krypton, which we saw the trailer a while back for, I think has potential as well. Out of the new stuff, The Orville, which is Seth MacFarlane's new kind of comedy Galaxy Quest / like Star Trek series, I quite like the look of. And this show kind of lives or dies on whether you find Seth MacFarlane funny, really, I guess. You know, he's the guy, the man behind Family Guy and American Dad and that sort of stuff.
Mm.
I know you've said you're not overly sold on this yet.
Yeah, it looks like if you take Star Trek and make it a comedy, but sort of not as good. I don't know, I just didn't... Some of the jokes that Seth MacFarlane's character made were okay. I don't know, something about the series just feels a bit sort of off and weird.
I definitely will be watching it. I love Family Guy. I think it's very funny. But as I say, this sort of lives or dies on whether you like Seth MacFarlane or not, because it's going to be very much his sense of humour. It does look very much like the movie Galaxy Quest or you know, a spoof of Star Trek. So, I don't know. We'll see how it fares with the populace, but I do quite like the look of this. I think it's interesting for the US to be doing comedy sci-fi, because it's not really an area they've done before, you know, not on TV terms anyway, not particularly, not that I remember. So I quite like the look of that. There's also, of course, the new Star Trek Discovery series, which we've now had a trailer for, which looks quite good, I think. I'm quite looking forward to that.
Okay, I didn't notice there was a trailer that came up for that one. That was okay, the only one that I missed.
Oh, that's up on the website as well. But yes, yeah. There is a trailer for that. That looks quite interesting.
I did see a picture of, I'll just say Sasha. Yeah. Sasha in a Star Trek uniform.
Yes.
Which looked okay.
Yeah, the uniforms are quite good. They're kind of a cross between the Star Trek Enterprise uniforms and the kind of, you know, a more modern kind of standard, you know, next generation uniform, which I think is quite interesting. There was a couple of interesting shows which are on CBS. There's a show called The Good Doctor, which I thought looked quite interesting, which is from House's David Shaw, starring Freddie Highmore from Bates Motel. That looked quite interesting.
I've written down, because obviously my notes are a bit shorter than yours, I wrote down The Good Doctor, yes. Was that the one with the special boy? He's sort of able to, I like that one.
He's a sort of high functioning autistic boy who moves to a large hospital in sort of an attempt to expand his skills, essentially. He's kind of fairly socially unaware. So
to be clear, when I say special, I mean he's like what seems like he might have these sort of powers, kind
yes.
of.
Yes. Yeah,
that's what I meant.
Yeah, he's basically a very high functioning, but has problems relating to other people. It looks like it could be quite interesting. It's got Richard Schiff in it from the West Wing as well, which is always good as far as I'm concerned. So that looks good.
I'm not really a Doctor's TV type person, so this is it's a bit more of a different kind of spin on it. It's not something like a Casualty or Holby City. That's your sort of standard.
Yeah.
Hospital show
looks kind of interesting and different though.
Yeah,
there's a show called Instinct which hasn't had a trailer yet, but that sounded quite good. That's the one that stars Alan Cumming. That looked like it could be quite good, where he's a college lecturer who's also ex-CIA and gets kind of dragged back into the CIA. That sounds like it could be quite good, but there's no trailer for that yet. And Wisdom of the Crowds, which looked really interesting, that's Jeremy Piven's new show about a guy that creates an app that is designed to help basically solve the murder of his daughter. He's a sort of tech genius, designs this app and then puts a massive reward up for anybody that can give him information about the murder of his daughter. But as a byproduct of that, it starts picking up information about other crimes as well. So you've got this nice kind of overarching thing about him trying to catch his daughter's murderer. But on top of that, you've got a kind of week by week, them solving crimes using this app. But the trailer for that is really interesting. I thought that's got a lot of potential for being quite a good procedural weekly show, I thought.
Okay, yeah. Which one was that called again, sorry?
Wisdom of Crowds, that's called. So yeah, there's some amazing stuff though. There's some really interesting different new shows. There's a lot of military dramas. Was there any that particularly stood out to you?
The CW military drama.
Valor.
Yeah. I thought that looked quite good, because I've been looking for a sort of army kind of sort of TV series drama. So I can't find that many around there, apart from something like Strike Back, which is a little bit more in that sort of world.
Yeah.
So apart from something like, I know it's a bit different, but something like 24 is sort of like that, but you know, is slightly different. So yeah, that could be one to look for.
Yeah, that looked quite good. On the CW side as well, I thought Life Sentence was, the trailer for that is infinitely better than the description described it as well, because the description's the thing about that's the one stars Lucy Hale, about a girl who's diagnosed with terminal cancer and then discovers she doesn't have or discovers she's cured, and the description says she has to learn to live with the choices she's made while she was living like she was dying. But if you actually watch the trailer, it's not really that. A lot of the trailer is focused around the fact that it's a change in how her family and friends treat her now she's not dying, because when she was dying, it was kind of, they're all trying to keep her calm and make, you know, and make everything happy and kind of fluffy for her, whereas now that's not the case. It sort of changes her relationship with her family and her husband, and the trailer for that is an infinitely better the description made out it was going to be. It actually looks all right, that. So we'll see. But obviously we've got to see where any of these gets picked up over here as well, because there's no guarantee they all will do. So
one of the other ones I quite liked, I can't remember which network this was on, but Splitting Up Together.
Oh, yeah.
In my short notes, I've got Pam from The Office with the nasty guy from Nashville.
yes, that's true. So that was, I can't remember whether that was a CBS comedy or I can't remember which network that was on, but yeah.
ABC maybe?
Oh yeah, no, it's an ABC one. So yeah. You're right, it's an ABC comedy that. I thought that was... it didn't really grab me, that one, but I think that's the thing with comedies, they can hit very hard with some people and they're not with others. I thought Deception looked quite good, which is an ABC show. That's a Greg Berlanti show about the magician that joins the FBI, I think it is, helps the FBI solve cases.
Okay. I didn't like the look of it, but it didn't quite grab me.
Yeah. So
I've put Deception, no. It looked fine. Like if you like magician type things, I'm sure that would be pretty good.
Yeah. I thought that looked quite fun. So, but we'll see. I mean, lots of stuff out there to come.
I've written down Ghosted and then put Fox, please stop it and make more 24.
Yes, Ghosted. Yeah. Ghosted was, it was sort of, it's kind of like a comedy version of The X-Files, but it doesn't work at all.
No.
I really didn't like that at all.
So after watching The Orville and then watching Ghosted, I was like, no, stop it. This is 34.
In total, there have been 71 renewals, 33 cancellations, and 39 new shows. So it was actually more renewals this year than last year. Last year, I had 66 renewals, 36 cancellations, and 42 new shows. So less new shows, more renewals, and less cancellations. So, yeah, not quite as many new shows as last year. I mean, they're close, but not that much. NBC did a lot better this year. They cancelled 10 shows last year. They only cancelled 4 this year. So,
yeah.
Interesting little tidbit came up about Timeless as well, because last night, Sean Ryan, who's one of the two people that make Timeless, as we were talking about last week, that got cancelled and then came back again within about the space of 2 days. One of the things... with that, Sean Ryan did a Reddit Ask Me Anything thread where people post questions and he answers. He did that last night. And somebody asked him about how important international viewing stats are when it's considered for renewal. And he came back and said, it's vital for our renewal. Foreign revenue has become a bigger and bigger factor in renewals and American TV shows in recent years, which is definitely something that we'd identified as being a thing. And this is why we say, do not illegally stream stuff. Go and watch it when it's bought by a network. You know, when it's bought by a channel in the UK, make sure you go and watch it. Because although the number of people watching over here doesn't directly add on to the viewing figures in the US, what it does is the more people watch it here, the more chance a UK channel has of buying a show. And if a UK channel buys a show, that gives more money to the US network, which makes it more likely to get renewed because they make more money out of it.
Yeah.
So it's important. It's important that you watch these things on legitimate sources and not like going to stream them from various dodgy websites. So you can now influence and make a difference by doing that, because previously they'd not really considered the international viewing as much, but now it's starting to become a major factor in whether a show gets renewed or not. Is where people are viewing it internationally makes a difference now. So that is worth considering when you're going to find a dodgy website to go and stream the latest episode of something. So unless you've got anything else you want to put in, I think we're done for those bits and pieces. We can move on to some TV and film news. Start off the TV and film news this week with a few renewals and cancellations that came in after last week's show. Last Man Standing got cancelled, which is the Tim Allen show. A lot of people are saying it's probably because of the fact that he was a strong supporter of Trump, and it's fairly politically conservative, that show. They're saying it's for business and scheduling reasons, and the fact that it's made by 20th Century TV. So it's Fox that actually make it. But it airs on ABC. ABC are adamantly denying that they've cancelled it because of his politics, but I'm not entirely convinced. I know Tim Allen has made noises about the fact that you have to be careful what you say in LA if you're a Republican supporter. So, tricky. Quantico got renewed, but he's going to get a new showrunner, apparently. What's been very interesting this season is, as we were saying with foreign viewing, we're seeing that, like, purely US viewing figures are no longer being kind of the one big major factor of whether a show gets cancelled or renewed. There's now a whole bunch of things that are kind of jigsawing together into the renewal process. And some of that's foreign investment from, you know, people buying the show overseas. Some of that's the resale value of something to streaming services and things like Netflix and Hulu, as well as the domestic viewing figures. But like shows like Quantico and Elementary, which got renewed as well this season, both have fairly low US viewing figures,
yeah,
but still manage to get renewals due to the fact that they either sell well abroad or they sell well onto streaming services. You know, there's been various other things that are starting to factor in, which I think is quite good. Also, not coming back this season, but not necessarily cancelled, 24 Legacy and Prison Break, which they've said are not coming back right now. What they basically said is that with Prison Break, they're looking to try to make it an event thing every time they bring it back. So it won't be coming back every season, but they're not ruling out bringing it back at some point in the future. 24 Legacy, slightly different issue with that. Yes, they're also talking about wanting to bring it back as an event thing. But on top of that, your man that plays Eric Carter is currently in a play and also has to try and finish off his storyline one way or another on Walking Dead. So he's pretty much unavailable. That's the biggest problem that they've got with it at the moment.
That's a bit of a strange situation where he gets his role on Walking Dead, which I think he got introduced season 6, I think, and we're coming up to season 8. So he gets the role on, you know, a massive US show, and although he's not like one of the bigger characters, it's still good for him to be on that, because he's on the same level as like a Terra or like a Father Gabriel type character. So he still would have got plenty of screen time. I mean, him and Terra got their whole episode together. Last season. I kind of like what you said when, like, if Fox asks you to be the leading man on 24, the new reboot, and asks you to, you know, take Kiefer Sutherland or Jack Bauer's shoes, essentially, you're pretty much going to take that, because although you're on this great show, The Walking Dead, you've been offered a lead role on another big show. I was a bit surprised about this Broadway thing. I think maybe for him it was sort of like, because we spoke a few times on our podcast and said that either if 24, I guess, he got a second season, he wouldn't come back to Walking Dead. If Designated Survivor got a second season, which it did, then there's no way Kiefer could come back. So it was either like, to me, it was either he would have gone back to Walking Dead or back to 24 for this next, let's say, like the next year.
Yeah.
And in this Broadway thing, I was like, well, what's he doing Broadway? Well, unless it was just like, I don't know.
My guess is that, so usually what happens with a network show, with a big show, is you'll sign a contract. For example, like, you know, when people like Patrick Stewart were signed up onto Star Trek The Next Generation, for example, they sign contracts for 7 years because it's a big network show and it's, you know, 22 episode seasons, and they will sign them into those contracts. Because 24 Legacy was only ever bought in as an event series, he probably wasn't locked down into another contract. Therefore, if a Broadway show comes up and is an interesting enough part, he needs to work. He needs to earn money. So, you know, he needs to work. So, you know, that's why he goes and does it. The problem is that now they're going, oh, well, we want to bring it back. They've got to work around whatever else he's doing. And the problem is that if they've not locked him in for multiple seasons, he's free to do whatever he likes. So I don't blame him for it. It's entirely, you know, it's entirely what you know, he's a jobbing actor. That's what they do. Mm. It sounds very much like they're very interested. Fox are looking to bring both those shows back, just not immediately. That seems to be the case.
See, it's interesting because we've seen, because 24 finished 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So we've seen how we could get a second season, whereas with Prison Break, we haven't seen the end of this fifth season yet.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting, like, because they're saying, like, basically they're saying we're still interested in these two properties, we'll bring them back, but just not quite yet. Once we have like a stable idea, that's kind of what it seems like.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see how the season finale of Prison Break is like this
year.
The whole season this year of Prison Break has been a bit of an odd thing. It's not been a bad show or anything. It's just been
I'm enjoying it so far.
Yeah.
I like the idea that they basically made it so the entire city, you know, that entire kind of area is basically the prison for them, you know. Mm. So I quite like that.
It's like surrounded with these other guys that are chasing them down.
So two other shows that won't be coming back, which are Fox shows, Scream Queens and Shots Fired. I mean, Shots Fired technically was always supposed to be an event series, but didn't get particularly high ratings, so that's not going to be coming back. And I know we've just said ratings aren't the be-all and end-all, but I think with some things, they'll look at it, you know, make the decision. So that's not coming back. Scream Queens, again, has consistently been doing quite badly, and it's not particularly highly rated.
No, not really talked about much either.
No, which, you know, and that does make a difference as well. So, you know, that's not coming back.
I mean, if you can put Scream and Scream Queens, which, you know, have very similar titles. You know, I only saw the pilot episode of Scream Queens, and it was a bit like a sort of, if you take Scream, have kind of a similar plot, but make it funny when someone dies, or it's basically a silly version of Scream. So I mean, Scream is a like series, like that's a series that at least tries to make you care a bit more about the characters. Like you get some deaths that aren't quite as silly or sort of weird. I'm not surprised that Scream Queens has got cancelled, really.
They've also brought Arrested Development back for a fifth season, which is fine. I mean, I do hope that the fifth season is better than the fourth, because the fourth season on Netflix had funny moments but was nowhere near up to the quality of the first three. So I'm hoping that they get a bit back on track with the fifth season of that.
I remember when I finished it was Masters of None, and there was another comedy earlier this year that I finished. I can't remember which one it was, but each time, you know, after you finish a series on Netflix and it can't say like next episode, it was like, oh, Arrested Development, wink wink, you should watch this.
Yeah.
Like Netflix recommends you watch this. So they've shown it to me a lot of times. Or like, you know, when you load Netflix and it has the spotlight thing?
Yeah, yeah.
It's come up on there quite a few times.
Have you actually got to watch it though?
I haven't clicked play. So,
yes. Yeah, you should do. They're usually quite accurate.
I just haven't.
First three seasons of brilliant, well-crafted bits of TV. Fourth season, not quite so much, I don't think. But we'll see what happens with the fifth.
Is this a Netflix original series?
No, fourth season was a Netflix original. I can't remember what it went out on before, but fourth season is a Netflix original.
Okay.
So the first three weren't, but fourth season was. Also officially coming back is Roseanne, which I think we've talked about on here before, which is the 90s sitcom, which I'm guessing you've never seen an episode of Roseanne.
No.
I mean, I know this show fairly well. Spawned various different people, from Sarah Chalk from Scrubs, Johnny Galecki from Big Bang Theory started on there, John Goodman, it's where he got his, movie actor, it's where he got his start on TV, and Joss Whedon, of course, started. That's where he first started writing.
Okay,
for TV.
Was that his first thing?
Yes, that was pretty much. I mean, might not have been his very first thing, but that's certainly where he really got his foot in the door, was on Roseanne. I'm sort of happy they're bringing it back. It will be interesting to see whether it works. They're only coming out for 10 episodes. I'm sure somebody out here will pick it up. But I mean, it's about sort of every average American family living kind of hand to mouth. But it's quite a fun comedy show. That, moving on to other new shows, this one was really interesting. Netflix announced that they're going to make a Witcher TV series.
Awesome. I've thought about this every other day since it got announced, and I don't see how they can get this wrong.
Yeah, I think it's just got everything going for it. I mean, the interesting thing, of course, is that they've already proved that you can make compelling stories with it, because they've made three very, very successful video games out of it. So the TV series is going to be based off the original novels, centers on a group of witchers, which are hunters who develop supernatural abilities at a young age to battle deadly monsters, for those of you that don't know the games. The books have been New York Times best-selling. They've spawned major video game franchises. It's been translated into over 20 languages. I mean, it's a brilliant, brilliant world to play around with. I'm glad it's Netflix that are doing it, because it needed to be Netflix or HBO somebody.
This wouldn't work on like ABC or Fox or something like that. So.
No, it needed to be somebody that can have the ability to make it as adult as they want, I think, you know, so you can be as violent as you like. You can throw in whatever you want to it. And so it needed to be either on a cable network. I mean, you know, it needed to be on HBO or Stars or Netflix. So I think this is the perfect place for it. It's interesting because they've got a couple of shows coming up which are going to be very big sort of fantasy shows or very big sci-fi shows, because they've got this coming up. They've got Altered Carbon, which is a huge sci-fi thing that they've got coming. I'm very much looking forward to this. I think this could be a massive thing for them. Whether it ends up being Netflix's Game of Thrones, I don't know, but
think it will. I've really got like a lot of hopes for this.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends who they cast and stuff, and like what exactly the storyline is. Because I read this somewhere else, and then you posted it shortly after, and like I read the title twice, and then sort of read a bit about it, and I was just like smiling for 5 minutes after, and I thought, I can't believe this is happening. Because if you take all the video game films that have been made that haven't been very successful, things like what we had, like Assassin's Creed, Ratchet and Clank. I think there was a Mortal Kombat film. There was a Hitman film. None of those really did anything. So maybe a Netflix TV series is the way to go in terms of a screen adaption. So.
Yeah, and plus you have to bear in mind that, I mean, the video games are based off the novels, and the TV series is also going to be based off the novels. It's not necessarily based off the video game. So it's not like, I think in a lot of cases where the video game stuff has failed, it's because it's been an adaptation of a video game. It's not been an adaptation of a novel, which has that extra depth that you can get into, you know. But I think this has a lot of potential. It's already got quite a large built-in audience because of the video games. So, you know, there's people that know the characters and know some of the stories. So I think this could be really, really good. I'm looking forward to this. Don't know when it's going to be coming out yet, but hugely looking forward to that. I think it could be fantastic.
If you're a gamer and you haven't got this yet, go and get the Game of the Year edition and then thank me in about 2 years.
Yes.
Because it will take you a while to play this game. So
yeah, particularly
bear
if
that
you've
in
not,
mind as well.
If you've not played any of them yet, then starting at The Witcher 1 and going to The Witcher 3, you've got probably about 400 hours of gameplay there. sticking with Netflix, they've got another new show coming, which is a prequel to the Jim Henson movie The Dark Crystal. This is The Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance. It's a 10-episode fantasy adventure series. It's a prequel to the groundbreaking 1982 fan favorite The Dark Crystal. It takes place many years before the events of the film. It's been shot in the UK. We'll star an ensemble of fantastical state-of-the-art creatures created by Jim Henson's Creature Shop and the original features conceptual designer, because they were very unique kind of they weren't like Muppets. They were very unique looking creature models that they had for The Dark Crystal. So I think this is quite kind of really interesting. It's Louis Leterre, who is the director of Now You See Me and The Incredible Hulk. He's exec producing the series and directing. You've got Jeffrey Addis and Will Mathers, who wrote A Year in the Life. They're part of the writers. And Javier Grillo Marchus. He's one of the writers on Lost in the 100, so he's also writing it. Have you seen the Dark Crystal film? I don't know whether it's one you may have seen
as
a child.
I've not heard of this, and I don't quite know what it is. So, okay. Yeah,
it was... Dark Crystal was a movie that came out in the 80s. It was a mixture of live action and puppetry that they used. As I say, not kind of Muppet level, not comedy. It was done as kind of drama, basically. I think it's sounding like it could be quite interesting. I'm looking forward to that. I know they got a fairly solid reaction when I posted it online. So it's going to be 10 episodes long. It starts shooting in the autumn. So that probably means it's going to be out some point next year. That's Dark Crystal prequel series called Dark Crystal Age of Resistance. There was another show which popped up as well, which is new and kind of got skipped over with all the other renewals and stuff that was coming out. Daniel Radcliffe and Owen Wilson are starring in a new TV series called Miracle Workers. The first series, it's actually an anthology series. The first season is a workplace comedy set in heaven. It's created by a guy called Simon Rich, who was one of the writers on SNL and Inside Out and Man Seeks Woman. Show's based on a book named What in God's Name. It sees Radcliffe playing Craig, who is a lowly angel responsible for the handling of all humanity's prayers. Well, Wilson plays his boss, aka God. So he's pretty much, God has basically lost interest in guiding humanity and spend most of his time doing his favorite hobbies. To prevent Earth destruction, Craig must achieve his most impossible miracle to date. It's given a straight to series order by the US network TBS of 7 episodes, due to land some point next year. I really like the sound of this, and there's 2 very high profile actors to put into a TV show as well.
I mean, it sounds interesting. It'd be one of those things to check out a trailer before I, you know, see if I'm gonna watch it, sort of thing. But yeah, 2 really good actors in Daniel Radcliffe and Owen Wilson. So yeah, they got that going.
Yeah. So I think that looks quite good. And last bit of news we've got is Supernatural is getting a Scooby-Doo crossover.
As you were reading the previous story and I was scrolling down to see what the next one was, I had to hold in some laughter because you were reading the thing and I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's the reaction for this has been very, well, I mean, overwhelmingly positive, certainly, when I posted this onto Facebook. There's an awful lot of people going, we are so watching this, this sounds brilliant. Few comments going, okay, fine, yeah. And a couple of people going, oh, this show's jumped the shark. And I disagree entirely with that last statement, because anybody that says that Supernatural is kind of, oh, it's gone too far, it's jumped the shark. You're talking about a show which they've had things like an episode called Pac-Man Fever, which saw them trapped in a video game. They've had the monster at the end of this book where they discover there is a book series called Supernatural about 2 hunters called Sam and Dean. And the fandom of the Supernatural book has been something which has gone on throughout the show. They're changing channels where they were trapped in a soap called Dr. Sexy MD. And they had a episode called The French Mistake, which completely smashed the fourth wall of television and put the pair of them in an alternative reality where they were playing actors on a show called Supernatural. And the actors were named Jared Padaletti and Jensen Ackles. So, I mean, they are known for doing this sort of thing on the show. And, you know, if you can get away with stuff like that already, and this is stuff that's happened seasons ago, nothing is going to make this show jump the shark, I don't think. And so the fact that they're doing a Scooby-Doo crossover...
Nothing is going to turn the viewers off.
Nothing is going to turn people away from this. The fact that they're doing a Scooby-Doo crossover, they're going to be animators in it. I mean, Supernatural has been known as Scooby-Doo for adults. I've heard it referenced to that before. So, okay. You know, and it kind of is. You know, it's the two guys solving mysteries. I'm a huge fan of the show. I think this is going to be awesome. See them animated actually in a sort of Scooby-Doo style. I'm completely sold. Totally on board.
I mean, I've not watched the show much. In fact, I've only seen the pilot, but this episode does sound particularly funny and interesting. So yeah, I'll check out this episode.
Yeah, Supernatural is one of those shows. The first season was a little bit stayed in terms of trying to find its feet. But once you get through the first season, it's just joyous show to watch because they take it to all sorts of completely bizarre places and you just go with it. It's just amazing. So of course, Supernatural getting a Scooby-Doo crossover. Of course, I'm completely sold with that. So that's everything for the news this week. Next up, we have an interview.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The interview this week is with composer Nathan Barr. Nate is an Emmy-nominated composer behind such shows as The Americans. He worked on AMC's The Sun, starring Pierce Brosnan. Amazon's con man drama Sneaky Pete was also one of his. He also worked on Hemlock Grove for Netflix and True Blood as well. This is the second time we've interviewed Nate, so we catch up on the stuff that he's been working on more recently, and he's also quite well known for having a weird and wonderful collection of instruments, so we talk a bit about that. He's really is one of the nicest guys you can talk to in the composing industry in Hollywood. I really enjoyed talking to him. So here's the interview. It's about 20 minutes. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Nathan. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Great.
Nice to be talking to you again. It's been about 3.5 years, I think, since last time we spoke.
Yeah, exactly. It's been quite a while. Good to be talking to you, too.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we have video last time. I get to see your studio. There's some amazing things in the background.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of different weird instruments and cellos and a lot more over a lot of guitars over there, harpsichord over here and hurdy-gurdies and weird string things and a lot of different stuff.
That's
and I'm actually
cool.
I'm just building a studio right now with a scoring stage down in Reseda, which will be able to accommodate about a 50-piece orchestra. And I'm putting on that stage, I'm putting a very famous musical instrument from film music history. It was the Wurlitzer Theater Organ built for the Fox scoring stage in 1928.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that because I think you possibly just bought it last time we spoke.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
So
the restoration is almost done after 3-4 years.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I was going to ask you where you were at with that, but that's cool. Oh, I'm glad that's going somewhere, because that's going to be an amazing bit of history to keep.
It really is. And I look forward to seeing it get back into film and TV where it belongs and sharing it with the world. I think it's going to be such an amazing instrument. The restoration process, as they've been building, has just been amazing. They've just sort of realized, as they've gone through the instrument, thousands of pieces of the instrument, just what a spectacularly made instrument it is.
Wow.
So it's really exciting.
The only problem is now, though, every time a project comes up, you'll be going, you know what, work here, a Wurlitzer.
I'm going to be sneaking it in wherever I can, even if it doesn't sound like an organ, even if it's just like a single low pedal tone, I'll get it into everything I do. And hopefully I won't be blacklisted for it.
It'll be awesome. I'll be listening out for it. The projects, obviously, you're best known for True Blood, The Americans, Sneaky Pete, which you picked up since last time we spoke, Hemlock Grove as well. You've been doing The Sun, which we'll talk about in a minute as well, because that looks really interesting. So, The Americans is what, season five?
Five
is the next one? Yeah, I think we're getting it. Is it running in America now, I think, or coming soon?
It just started a couple weeks ago.
Think we're getting it late spring, early summer over here. So we've got a little bit to wait. Yeah.
Well, over there.
It's been interesting. It's been bounced around quite a bit. It was on ITV, and then like it went on to Amazon for a bit, and then it kind of ITV have got it back again on one of their other channels. So it's been kind of backwards and forwards. But it's a great series, a very timely series at the moment, I guess.
Hilarious. Yeah, it's unbelievable. None of us can believe that. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's funny because whenever I talk to any composers and I ask them the question, what shows do you love the music in, and what are your favorite other TV composers? Two people that always come up are Sean and you, Sean Callery and you. So
really
not to stroke your ego too much, but
and I mean honestly, the biggest compliment there is being in the same company with Sean, because I just adore Sean. and his work. He's just such a good guy.
Yeah, I interviewed Sean a while back, but yeah, he's such a nice bloke. And it's Sean for Homeland and your stuff on the Americans are the two things that seem to come up quite a lot. But it is, I mean, the theme particularly on that show, I love. I think it's just brilliant. But yeah, I mean, you're known, as we can see from your studio, you've got a lovely collection of weird and wonderful instruments. What do you think the strangest thing is that you've picked up?
I mean, one of the strangest things is right here. That's a human femur. and it's from I don't know where it's from. It's from China or Tibet or something like that. And it's clad in sort of silver here and here. It's capped off.
Yeah,
and it's supposed to be a trumpet. I've had many people up who've tried to play it who play trumpet and they can't get a sound out of it. So I think it's more of an ornamentation thing. But apparently it's something that is done over there with some of the monks, you know, that they have some portion of their bodies made into some sort of relic after they're gone. I've heard of like skull cap percussion instruments and then these femur bone trumpets. So that's one of the weirdest things. And then I have a whole bunch of automatic musical instruments that are quite strange and unusual. And the collection's always growing. Like one of the things I'm getting in addition to that Wurlitzer is an instrument called a shaker chime. It was made by Deegan in 1890, and I'm just having it restored right now. And that's quite an unusual instrument, especially this particular set. It's hard to describe the sound. Someone would almost hear it like a steel drum or chimes, and they're these. Things that swing off a rod and you shake them and they make sort of a chimey sound. And it's really unusual, cool instrument. So that's pretty out there.
That's excellent. I like that. That sounds very cool. So, I mean, you've got quite a wide variety of shows you're working across these days as well. I mean, you know, you started off True Blood, you were quite well known for, and that's kind of horror based, and Hemlock Grove was kind of horror based. And then you end up on The Americans, which is kind of historical drama, I guess, I suppose, because it's 80s set. So, you know, you've got that. Then Sneaky Pete comes along, which is an amazing show.
Good. I'm glad you like it.
I adore that show. I'm still only about halfway through the first season at the moment. And I'm desperately trying to get back to it. I just tried to find the time. But I adore that show. And we've been talking about it a lot on the podcast because I've mentioned it. And then the co-hosts have gone off and watched it and come back and gone, it's brilliant. I love that show. So so it's great. So where did you start for the music for that? Because that's sort of set modern day.
Yeah. That was a really interesting one. I'm trying to remember how that even came to me. But basically, they were looking. So it started off as a show at CBS, and then CBS passed on it, as you probably know. And then Amazon picked it up and retooled it. And it became something quite different than I think it probably ever would have been on CBS. And so that was exciting to become involved. And so they were, I think they went through a couple composers on the way to finding me. And my longtime assistant, a guy named Steven Lukacs, he and I really did it together. We had such a great time. We were looking for something we could collaborate on together. And so when we took a look at the show, just the look of it and the pace of it and the style had a feeling that was a bit more contemporary than a lot of the stuff I've done. And so that's kind of where it started. And so we wrote a 6-minute demo, a scene together. And that's what landed the gig. That's what got us the gig. They really liked sort of it. They felt it had a fresh contemporary sound in a way that they were looking for. So, yeah.
What sort of instruments did you start with that? Because you're a cellist by sort of, yeah, that seems to be the thing that you kind of go for more than anything else. Was it cello or were you was it something else?
Maybe there was a little cello in there. It was definitely one of those things where one of the instruments I use a lot is a toga. It's a bowed guitar. I use it a lot in The Americans and through True Blood. At some point, you want to like try and depart a little bit from the sound you're known for.
Yeah.
And so I tried to say, okay, let's do a show where I don't actually pick that up for the entire season. And I think I managed to do that. I think it was really about basses and guitar, upright bass, electric bass guitars, percussion, just sort of like back to basics in terms of like rock and roll band kind of thing, even though it's not really a rock and roll sound. And then a lot of synth too, which is kind of new for me, or or created synth sounds. Like, I was like, instead of working with a synth on my computer, I would rather record something and then manipulate it with plugins and stuff to turn it into a synth sound kind of thing. And so that's kind of where that came from. And then the theme, the themes and sort of main sounds, they were all in that first demo we did. So it was really fortunate that we sort of landed on a bunch of things that the producers really responded to.
That's very cool. You mentioned there about using synths and stuff. Do you tend to go more towards physical instruments rather than the synth side? Why do you prefer doing it that way around?
I just like picking up an actual instrument, and I find that there's much more room for error in terms of playing an actual instrument, and out of error often great things come. And if I'm just sitting on a computer and I'm, what am I going to do? Slip on the mouse and hit another button accidentally? You know, like for me, there's more excitement in the possibility of error leading to something if I'm playing an instrument.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where it's all about. And then also, if I'm using a sample library, I am limited by whatever the imagination of the person recording that library on that day, you know, was working with. Yeah. And, just slapping, you know, you're playing an upright bass part and you just decide to play a little bit of percussion on the body. And that has a really cool sound to it. And it's very immediate and in the moment, and it becomes something unique.
Yeah. I mean, when you've got a collection of instruments like yours, I guess, you know, why would you go to a synth first?
If I can avoid it, I like focusing more on that side of things. But there's definitely some great synths we used in Sneaky Pete. So.
I know the sort of area that you live in LA, you're surrounded by other composers because there's kind of a junta that live on the hillside up there. Do you end up kind of, do you find that the other guys come over and try to sort of borrow some of your instruments? Do you end up trading stuff between each other?
We don't really, but we definitely trade stories and ideas and thoughts about working in the business. There's actually a junto in Topanga for composers, for film and television composers that you've probably heard of. It sounds like you maybe have.
Yeah.
And that probably has, you know, 15 to 20 composers in it. So I think the extent of it is that, you know, people can get together and share their horror stories or their successes as they happen. And that's been a really great thing, started by a guy named Andrew Gross, a composer named Andrew Gross. And it's turned into a really wonderful sort of local way to stay in touch with people. But I mean, literally, I could throw a stone this way and hit Dan Licht, the composer of Dexter.
Yeah,
and I throw a stone that way and hit like a Russ Landau or you know, who did Survivor or something. But anyhow, they're everywhere. I have to look out my studio window and see a composer over the fence listening to the, you know.
What's he doing this week? I think it's great that you have this little kind of creative community up there that, you know, I think that's absolutely fantastic. One of the other things you did for the Americans was you worked with Pete Townsend as well.
Yes.
From The Who. How was that and how did that come about?
That was amazing. That was just like one of those things where, so the producers for season two had an idea to sort of introduce the idea of collaborations outside of the team in many aspects of the show. And music was one of those. And so our music supervisor, PJ Bloom, and us, we all discussed, okay, who are some musicians we could reach out to? And we came up with an A-list of musicians and reached out to them. And Pete Townsend was one of the first ones to respond that he really loved the show and he really loved my music in the show. And so he was really interested. And so we hopped on the phone and he was really excited to do it. So I wrote basically two tracks that were in the sound of the show score, but that could be sung over or guitar or whatever. And I sent them via Dropbox to Pete. And he, a week later, emailed and said, check your folder. And I went in the folder and he had put down guitar tracks and vocal tracks and written lyrics. And it was just amazing. So this one track that I wrote, he really responded to. And so that was really kind of amazing, of course.
Yeah.
And then two of those tracks into my studio here and just pull up the faders and start to hear Pete Townsend's guitar on a track that I'd written. It was surreal. It was wonderful. So then I took the tracks and organized them in such a way over that scene that they really fit into the scene well, chopped it up, and Pete's so busy, like we got one pass at it, and then I sort of had to take it and weave it in and out of the scene and turn it into something that worked well for the scene. But yeah. It was brilliant. He's such a, he was a genuinely wonderful collaborator. We've stayed in touch and, just a very humble guy in his own way.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. And then we had lunch in London later that year, and that was pretty extraordinary too.
Oh, cool. So maybe more coming up at some point if you could.
Who knows? Yeah, who knows? Yeah,
that'd be very cool. Yeah. The new show that you've been working on, it's called The Sun. It's kind of stars Pierce Brosnan, set in 1800s Wild West Texas. So really quite divergent from anything else you've done before. How did that come to you and where do you start with that?
I think that came to me through my agent. I was just one of the composers that he suggested, and they knew my work and really liked it and were willing to meet with me. And so I read the script and I was really blown away by the script. And I went in and met with them all and kind of pitched them what my approach would be. And part of what my approach was, there was some on-camera vocal stuff happening in a party scene in episode one. And there's a wonderful sort of Americana fiddle player vocalist named Frank Fairfield, who I got to know through some friends, and I've been to see him many times perform. So I pitched him to them as well as an idea, and actually working his voice into the score. And they really liked that idea. And as it turns out, Frank became a pretty major part of the score. And then also did those songs. And so, yeah, it was really, they weren't looking for standard Western fare at all. They were looking sort of to depart from that. So it really became about something that was in my wheelhouse in terms of unusual instruments, but, fit the story that was being told. And it's a super dark, amazing story. Pierce Brosnan, I just think he's great in it.
Yeah.
It sort of bounces back and forth between 1800s and 1900s.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's wonderful. I grew very attached to the show during the course of working on it.
Yeah.
And that had another wonderful collaboration too. I worked with Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top.
Oh, wow.
He came in and laid down vocals in the last episode on a song that I arranged. And we had a great, great time doing that. So it's pretty cool.
So yeah, that's kind of interesting. Did you manage to sneak any, were there any banjos snuck into that? Because you sort of feel like Wild West, that sort of thing should have banjos in it somewhere.
A little bit. I mean, I think I used it very sparingly though. We tried to like stay away from the stuff that everyone would expect.
Yeah.
Even though it's totally natural to expect that. So yeah, like I worked in a Swedish bowed instrument called a nickel harpa, which is right here. So this you would not find in the Wild West at all.
Wow.
And yet it has a really amazing sound. So that became a pretty central instrument. It's a keyed fiddle, basically.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looks like it's kind of a almost violin shaped with keys across the bottom, which is kind of interesting.
The design is hundreds and hundreds of years old. And it gets bowed, and it's got a really kind of amazing sound. So I use that quite a bit.
That's very cool.
So it was sort of like, how do we take some unusual instruments and create the musical world of this thing without being too on the nose about it? And that was something that everyone really responded to. So
yeah, that's very cool. As I said, one of the questions that I do ask composers when I'm talking to them is, what music do you like from other TV shows? So. Right. Given that half of them say you, what music do you like in other people's shows?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a couple for sure. One of my dear friends is a composer named Matt Quayle. Mm. And I think Mac, did Mr. Robot. Mac, I think, is doing some really interesting, cool stuff. I love his approach to things. It feels very fresh. Sean, too. I love Sean's stuff. I was listening to it long before I had a TV career myself. And I really admire his stuff a lot. Game of Thrones, some of Ramin's stuff is really cool on Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Dave Porter's stuff, Breaking Bad, and that's really cool stuff. There are a whole bunch of composers right now, as you know, and TV shows that are really taking TV beyond anything we defined as TV 10 years ago or 15 years ago. And it's really exciting to be a part of that, that movement that's sort of happening for everyone in all departments.
You know?
I'm seeing that gravitation from the film world over to the TV world, and still happens the other way around too. But it's just people are really starting to plug into the fact that, oh my God, like if you have a really intriguing story with a bunch of amazing characters, who wouldn't want to watch 10, 20, 30 hours of that versus 90 minutes? I mean, it's like a no-brainer, you know? And if you keep someone coming back week after week for years, I mean, that's an extraordinary story that you're telling.
We've talked about this, you know, the change in just the TV landscape in the past, even, you know, 10 years, like you say, the idea of getting Anthony Hopkins on a TV show like Westworld, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have seen that happening. And now you've got people like Robert De Niro doing a show for Amazon, or Amy Adams, I think, has just got a TV, you know, is just going into a TV show.
Yes. And it's just like, I remember hearing a Danny Boyle interview. And he was saying that like things are opposite of what they should be right now. Typically, film was always the place storytellers went to really stretch the limits and push the boundaries. And now that's really happening on TV. And it's harder to get a film like that made at a studio level. Those were his thoughts. And I totally relate to that. And I think that's part of the reason people are gravitating.
Yeah, I mean, just some of the TV that's coming out right now is insane. I mean, you know, Westworld was fairly out there in places, but Legion is a show that I don't know whether you've...
Is it good? I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, it's utterly, utterly bonkers. completely... It's a show that you're watching and you kind of feel like you shouldn't be able to follow the plot, but you are. It's completely crazy, but absolutely magical, and not what you'd think. You know, it's essentially an X-Men spin-off, but I mean, it's unlike any other superhero thing you've ever seen. It is one of the best things I've seen on TV. It's so out there.
Oh, it's great.
I highly recommend that. But you get shows like that, and I think as a film, if you tried to put that out as a movie, I think it would be an incredibly difficult sell. But as a cable, you know, as an FX show, I think works incredibly well.
Awesome. Yeah. That's cool. Check that out.
Yeah, definitely. It's a brilliant, brilliant show. So to move on to some slightly more general questions, what's been your most interesting experience you've had over your career so far?
I mean, there have been so many, but I mean, certainly working with Pete Townsend is one of them, just because it's, you know, it's like one of those, being a film composer, TV composer is like one of those things where it can translate into all these areas that you don't expect. And that was certainly one of them. That was not something I ever thought would happen when I started on The Americans, just because, you know, who knew? And so I think that those kinds of collaborations are amazing. When I get to collaborate with other musicians, that's pretty amazing. Just the extraordinary, I mean, you can just pick up a phone and have like a world-class musician at the studio in you know, an hour in this town. It's pretty incredible. So those are always amazing experiences. I mean, still sitting in a theater or sitting down to opening night of a great television show with my music in it. I mean, that's always a really special experience to have. And then just for me, like being able to work in a career where I can collect all these instruments and just keep making music in unusual ways that's kind of why I do it. It's just so exciting.
Yeah. So what music inspires you at the moment? Is there stuff that you're listening to?
Yeah, I mean, there's always stuff I'm listening to. I mean, I've kind of gone on this crazy pipe organ, you know, I go through phases. And so I've really, Bach was always like my desert island composer, one of them. And so I've really been listening to a lot of Bach's organ work. And I never really realized until I did, like, you can't really know Bach's music unless you know all of his organ works, because he was first and foremost an organist, and he was a brilliant prodigy of an organist. And so that's been really inspiring, even if it's not, you know, directly like that ends up in my scores per se. Just hearing what he was able to do on that instrument is really incredible. And I listen to a whole variety of stuff. I mean, I listen to Coldplay. I listen to Chris Thiele. You know, just sort of across the boards. There's a lot of cool stuff. And then, I think that's kind of it. And then, but I think as composers, also we're also in a weird position where if we're spending, you know, 12 hours every day writing music after the day, last thing I want to do is turn on the stereo and listen to something else.
I get that entirely. Is there another career you think you'd be doing if you weren't doing what you're doing right now?
Not that I can think of. I mean, the people who work in a way that I see that is most appealing and that I understand are like the guy that made my harpsichord, or the guy that made my cello, or the guys who are restoring the organ. Like that incredible kind of craftsmanship and commitment to the historical aspects of whatever the craft is, that incredible detail, that's really appealing to me. So maybe I'd be doing something like that. I'd probably be, you know, installing pipe organs and doing something completely, completely different. But yeah, I love that commitment to craft and that commitment to detail. Like for example, with the pipe organ, you know, there are certain things they're doing as far as restoration goes that only another person coming in and taking something apart would appreciate.
Yeah.
But that's their passion and commitment to it. Is there even getting to the insides of things and making that look beautiful, even though it has no necessary value beyond, you know, aesthetics of it. Yeah.
What are you doing next? Can you talk about whatever the...
Yeah, I'm just finishing a movie at MGM on Monday. I'll be done. The dump starts Monday. It's a movie called The Domestics. It's with an actress, Kate Bosworth, and an actor, Tyler Hoechlin. And it's sort of a dark, apocalyptic thriller kind of thing. And it's been really fun. The director is a guy named Mike Nelson. It's his first feature. And he shot this really incredible short film and wrote a feature script. And he managed to attract some really wonderful talent, even beyond the cast, to be a part of it. And it's been a great experience. So that film will be done in about a week and comes out this year. I have two other films I can't talk about yet, but that are coming up for me shortly. And then Americans is coming back for a final season next year.
Yeah.
I hope The Sun gets picked up. Sneaky Pete's coming back for sure next year. And then I'm doing a show called Greenleaf, which Oprah Winfrey is producing and co-starring in.
Oh, okay.
I'm working on that right now as well. That may come back next year. And then working on building the studio. And so that's a lot on the plate right now.
Yeah, busy, I think.
Yeah, busy.
Always the best day to be in that town.
Yeah.
Two last questions, which we ask everybody. What TV shows are you watching at the moment, firstly?
So the first one, Billions.
Yes, great show.
Yeah, great show. I'm watching Billions. I'm watching Taboo.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Hardy show on FX.
Yeah, very good.
And I was watching – I'm watching Homeland again.
Yeah.
Those are the main ones I'm watching right now.
Okay.
Currently.
Cool. Yep. If you had the opportunity to work on any show, past, present, or future, which show would it be?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I mean, there's so many great ones out there. Certainly Game of Thrones would be a really fun one to do.
Yeah.
That would be one. This year in terms of the films, like Kubo and the Two Strings, Dario Marinelli's score to that.
Right, yeah.
That's really wonderful. So that was one where I thought, oh, that's really incredible. That would have been a fun one to do.
Yeah.
Just that beautiful stop motion animation that Laika does. And so I think those two, off the top of my head, those are the ones that come to mind.
Awesome. Well, I shall let you get back to your wonderful world of instruments have a lovely day.
Thank you so much for reaching out.
No problem. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. We'll have to try and not make it 3.5 years next time.
When the studio's done, that would be worth a fun. I could give you a video tour of that.
That would be brilliant. Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great. We'll do that. Okay. Cheers.
All right. Take care.
Cheers. Bye. So that was the interview with Nate Barr. Hope you really enjoyed that. I'm not sure when The Americans is going to come back yet. We think it's going to be at some point sort of in the summer or late spring. So keep an eye out for that. The Sun you can find on AMC if you want to go looking for that. Now we have some highlights for next week on TV. Highlights for next week on TV. The Blacklist returns for the third part of its fourth season. It really annoys me that they're sort of splitting things up quite so much at the moment in the US.
Yeah, 4C is a bit of a new thing that I've seen.
Yeah, they said there's a number of shows the number of shows that seem to have been split up across like three fairly sizable gaps this season. So 4C, for third part of season four, is back for The Blacklist. That's on the 24th of May at 9 p.m. Season three of Casual coming to Amazon Prime also on the 24th. Bloodlines is back on Netflix on the 26th for its final season, third season that is. Then we've got 12 Monkeys. That's back for its third season on the 26th at 9 p.m. on Sci-Fi UK. The airing of this is slightly odd though, because it's actually airing, I think, three episodes a night over 3 days. So it starts on the 26th, which I think is a Friday, and it's going to air Friday, Saturday and Sunday. You basically, if you've got other things in that are kind of recording around that time, just double check, you're going to be able to record all the episodes. But they apparently did the same thing in the US as well, or are doing the same thing in the US. So yeah, interesting way of doing it. I'm not entirely sure what inspired this decision, other than they think that it's quite a binge watching show, so they decided that they'd put it all out over a weekend so people can binge watch it, which I thought was kind of interesting.
We'll help you binge watch it by putting it all on at once.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I do wonder if more networks may start doing that. I mean, it's interesting. Rather than making you wait a week, sort of drop it all out over a week, maybe. Interesting. But anyway, so that's how they're doing it. It starts on the 26th on Sci-Fi UK. That's 12 Monkeys Season 3. Renewed for one final full season after that as well. Mercy Street, which is a new show coming to Drama. That's on the 28th of May at 8 p.m, which is a hospital drama set in the American Civil War. It's actually going out on UK TV Play from the 21st as well. So you can find it on streaming. Then two big shows coming. Handmaiden's Tale, which has finally got a UK broadcaster. That's coming onto Channel 4 on the 28th of May at 9 p.m. This is Margaret Atwood's dystopian novel about a near future USA under the grip of a totalitarian theocracy. This looks really good and it's getting amazing reviews in the US. So going to be one well worth going to see. It looks very, very interesting. Stars Yvonne Stravinsky from Chuck. You've got Alex Bedell from Gilmore Girls, Elizabeth Moss, Joseph Fiennes. I'm really looking forward to seeing that. I think it's definitely going to be one to watch.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people talking about The Handmaid's Tale, so yeah, it's pretty good.
So yeah, that starts Handmaiden's Tale Season 1, Channel 4 on the 28th of May at 9 p.m. for that. And lastly, we've got House of Cards returning for a fifth season on the 30th of May to Netflix. One Nation Underwood, which I still think is one of my favourite taglines of the year so far.
Yeah. Is this the final season?
Not necessarily, not as far as we know so far. They've certainly not said that, so we'll see. It may get another season after this. I'm sure they'll be interested to make more. I suspect that that's going to be one of the shows that's only going to stop when Kevin Spacey decides that he doesn't want to do it anymore, I think. As far as we know, it's going to have more seasons after that. So that's everything for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to add in.
Just wanted to recommend Entertainment Talk, which is my one, which David joins me for various different things. Yeah. Like we did 24, we got Walking Dead when that comes back in October. Yeah, doing some other things as well.
That's everything from us this week. If you want to find more information throughout the week, go to the website at geektown.co.uk to find all the latest airdate information, the latest TV news. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, you can email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. You can leave a message on the website post, find us at Geektown on Twitter or on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, or on Instagram at geektownuk. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.